You're back with The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. And whether you know it or not, you've likely seen Lindsay Addario's work. The award-winning photojournalist has captured intimate, human, startling, arresting, painful moments in the midst of many of our world's most devastating disasters and conflicts. Lindsay currently has a career-spanning exhibition on display at the School of Visual Arts in New York City, and it looks back at her fearless work over the last two decades. With me now is Lindsay Addario, Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist and author of the New York Times bestseller, It's What I Do. Lindsay, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much.
It is indeed what you do. Why?
Oh, it's such a tough question. Why? Why? I guess fundamentally because I believe in journalism. I believe that the world needs to see what's happening on the ground in many of these places where conflict is unfolding and there are injustices taking place against not only women and children, but civilians across the board. I believe that policymakers need to be held accountable to their decisions. And often they can't get to the places they make decisions for because it's not safe enough, simply. So there are many reasons why.
I've been challenged by this idea that visual images of the horrors that human beings enact on one another changes us. How do you capture images in a way that despite all that we see, still somehow break through?
I mean, it's a challenge, of course. I've been covering conflict for over two decades. And, you know, I'm constantly thinking about how do I make people care about this situation? How do I make people care about the fact that, you know, we are still seeing images of violence and war around the world? And I think for me, I often gravitate toward civilians, toward women, toward children, toward sort of the human toll. And I try to take pictures that offer the viewer some way in, some way to identify with the person in the photograph, some way for them to be able to relate. So, you know, if it's a mother, you know, we all share so many similar wants and needs and desires in our lives in every part of the globe. And so part of my job is to just connect us.
You were on the ground in Ukraine in the earliest days of the Russian invasion. You've been back many times since. Is it different from other conflicts?
I mean, there are similarities in every conflict. You know, I think I see sort of in the initial sort of weeks and months, people fleeing. So they're displaced, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are displaced from their homes. There's destruction on infrastructure and residential complexes. Obviously, civilians injured and killed. I guess with Ukraine, there's just a lot of unpredictability because there's so much long-range missile usage and artillery strikes, and it's harder to pinpoint exactly where the danger is because it's pretty much everywhere.
Of course, that notion of the danger being everywhere, it's perhaps your photo on the cover of the Times that certainly displayed that for so many of us. A woman and both of her children killed while trying to get to safety. Talk about the moment and that decision to take that photograph in that way.
I mean, the moment was pretty harrowing. I had gone to what I thought was a relatively safe place. I mean, obviously no place in Ukraine is totally safe, but it was a known civilian evacuation route. It was the Irpin Bridge. We have seen so many images of people, you know, the wounded, the elderly, just people crossing out of the suburbs, surrounding Kyiv into Kyiv for relative safety. I went there very early on a Sunday morning to try to capture images, those similar images of people fleeing. And shortly after getting there, there was a round came in. I don't know if it was a tank round or a mortar round. It came in pretty close to the position we were in. My security advisor asked if I wanted to leave, and I said no. It just somehow sort of felt safer where we were because we had a little bit of protection with this concrete wall. And also, my sort of perspective was, everyone knows, particularly Russian soldiers know exactly where the civilian evacuation route is. And of course, they would never target that. They're probably targeting a Ukrainian military position off to the side. So we stayed, and within minutes, another round came in closer to us. And then in very quick succession, another round came in, and it was, you know, about 20, 25 feet from where we were standing. We both, Andriy Dubchak, who was my colleague, who has been shooting video and is working as a translator for me, we both sort of dove for cover inside of the cement-like box. And when we popped up, it was totally chaotic. It was dusty. I had been sprayed with gravel, so I was trying to figure out if I had been hit with shrapnel. And I was asking him if I was bleeding. We were both a little bit in shock, and our security advisor ran out immediately, heroically, and pulled one of the territorial defense soldiers to safety, who had been injured in that blast. And we couldn't see what was in the distance. And so Steve, our security advisor, ran across. He called for a medic. So it was clear someone had been injured. I assumed it was another soldier. And when he finally called us to come across the street, because we were waiting for sort of clearance to move, we came upon these four lifeless bodies. There was a mother and two children, as you said, and a church volunteer who was sort of ushering them to safety. And when we came upon these bodies, the first thing I noticed were these tiny little sort of moon boots, boots of a child. And of course, I'm a mother, I have two sons. And the first thing I thought of was, oh my God. And I knew I had to take photographs because I knew what I had just witnessed. I knew I had just witnessed the intentional targeting of civilians. And so I started taking photographs, but also I've been doing this so long that I also knew I had to be very careful about how I took those photographs because it's so sensitive and I wanted to be respectful. I didn't want it to be too graphic, but of course I had to show that there were civilians who were just killed in front of me. And so I kind of like worked my way around the scene and took pictures very quickly because it was still extremely dangerous. There were still civilians sort of streaming past us. Some were sort of looking over at the horrific scene. Some didn't even look. And then we had to run out and try to get to our car, which was like, I don't know, maybe 500 feet off in the distance. And as we were leaving, two more rounds came in very close to us. We had to dive for cover again. And so it was all very sort of, it all happened very, very fast. And it was terrifying and heartbreaking.
Lindsay, pause with us for just a moment. We're going to be back more with Lindsay Addario. This is The Takeaway.
I got my potato
on Radiolab,
and I'm looking at it and I'm holding it.
We consider the mundane.
It's a handsome shape.
And stop to smell the potatoes.
I've been telling people about my potato. They're always surprised, and I say, you wouldn't understand.
Small potatoes on Radiolab.
It's my friend.
Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You're back on The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and we're continuing our conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist Lindsay Addario. Lindsay, you were telling a truly harrowing story about capturing that image, but then there's this more recent photograph of two Ukrainian police officers getting married in Kiev at the wedding hall this month. Talk to me about that picture.
Well, I think I've now done three sort of rotations in Ukraine. The first one was 6 weeks. We've talked a bit about how that went. It was just sort of constant barrage of missiles and artillery on Kyiv. The second trip was mostly in Donbas at the front line and also covering people streaming out of Mariupol into Zaporizhia. And the last trip, I wanted to focus on some feature stories, more sort of, you know, what does life look like now, 6 months into the war? And to my great surprise, a lot of people, you know, perhaps a third of the population has returned to Kyiv. And it was incredible. I mean, there are, you know, as you noted, people getting married. There are people on the streets. The cafes are back open. I saw people swimming on the beaches. There are little sort of pockets of beach along the Dnipro River. So it was, you know, in that sense, it was beautiful to see after witnessing so much death for so long. And it's not like that has ended. It's just sort of right now it's very focused on the east and in the south.
I'm thinking again for a moment as you were telling that story of capturing the family, and that it's the boots that in a certain way feel for you like the oh no moment, right?
Yeah.
As I was spending time with some of your work again, I was realizing that so many of the images I might experience as most brutal aren't necessarily that graphic or bloody. I'm thinking specifically of the young woman whose husband had held her down and cut off her nose and her ears. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking at a graphic bloody, she's actually quite beautiful and we see her standing there, but also that her nose is gone. And somehow that one, like I couldn't, that was the one that kept coming back in my dream, was even more than, you know, severed arms or something
sure.
on the battlefield.
Sure. I mean, I guess what I've learned over the years is that people don't want to look at really violent images. We see enough of that in our daily lives. We see it coming out of Hollywood. We see it coming, you know, we're sort of bombarded by these video games that are really violent. Our children are playing. You know, we see violence everywhere and experience it everywhere. And so for me, I'm trying to sort of distill these wars and this violence against women and, you know, maternal mortality and all of these issues that I've covered for so many years into an image that a viewer can actually look at and spend time with and ask yourself questions and, yes, revisit. And I think that's what I was trying to do with a mid-career retrospective at the School of Visual Arts, is really sort of give the viewer and people who look at my pictures a chance to sort of sit with them and to ask questions and also to get a bit of the behind the scenes. I mean, I think we talked about what happened with the family on the Irpin Bridge, and what we did in the exhibition is play Andriy's video. I didn't even realize he was sort of rolling as the mortar or the tank round came in, but play his video. And then we showed every single frame out of my camera. We showed a real series of frames out of the two cameras I was using to sort of piece together what it looked like from my eyes, you know, experiencing that attack, realizing it's a family, and literally moving around the scene. And I think we don't get to experience that as a public because we see one image out of a thousand, you know, so that's sort of what I was trying to do, is just give a more comprehensive look, not only at the images you see, but as what photojournalism, you know, what goes into this profession.
That's exactly where I wanted to go with you next, is you are an extraordinary photographer and you are a photojournalist. Help people understand the journalism part.
Yeah, I mean, a huge part of my job is doing reporting, talking to people, getting the facts, understanding what happened, understanding someone's life enough so that I know what to shoot and how to shoot it and what to focus on, and then presenting all of that in a package, you know, that means a caption that is well researched, fact checked, you know, that has enough information that the person looking at the image knows what they're looking at, and then putting that all together. You know, my job isn't to just go out and make pictures. You know, that is a fraction of what I do. So much of what I'm doing when I'm not shooting is preparing and, you know, becoming well versed in a subject, trying to understand what's going on and reporting.
Talk to me about consent as part of that.
Yeah. I mean, consent is, it's tricky because in so many of the countries I work, there's a language issue. So I always have a translator with me. There's often trauma involved. So I try and not only get consent from the person I'm photographing, but maybe a counselor who is with that person or someone who is in that person's life pretty consistently, who can also guide me and make sure that that person understands consent. I think with the proliferation of social media, you know, I have to say, yes, this is for the New York Times, for example, but it will appear on Facebook and everywhere else, because I think, you know, we cannot be sure anymore that the images will appear just where we think they will appear. You know, we have to assume that all of our images appear everywhere. And that is a fair assumption these days. So it's tricky. I mean, I always, always take so much time to get consent. And I think, you know, I can only hope I get it right. I often shoot both ways of face and no face. But some people are very clear. They don't want their face. That's fine. Some people say yes. And then, you know, I've had someone come back to me 2 years later and say, well, I just got married. Can you erase that photo? And it's like, I can't because it's on the internet, you know. And so it's tricky.
Here we come to the end of this conversation and we manage a little laugh. Where's the light? Where is the inspiration? Where is the remaining humor? How do you not just get dragged into the depth of this suffering?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think that genetically I'm just a happy person, you know, which I can thank my parents and my sisters and also the thing that I've witnessed over the years and sort of the darkest of dark circumstances is that people naturally gravitate to humor. You know, I think it's a natural instinct to try to continue laughing, to look for those moments of levity, to make light out of darkness. And I think that most of the people who do what I do have a sense of humor. We rely on that to pull us out of whatever we're witnessing. And I think, you know, it's really important.
Lindsay Addario, thank you so much for joining us here on The Takeaway.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Master Series Lindsay Addario Soul Exhibition is on display at the School of Visual Arts in New York City until October 29th. You can also check out some select photos of her work on our Instagram page,